everyone. My name's Hallie Applebaum, and I'm the founder of Future of Women. Today, we're speaking with Lauren Bates about how losing her job led to her dream job.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. It's so good to talk to you.
I've had a few podcast conversations, and they've all been with women who have a unique perspective on what's happening right now. Their life has been radically shifted because of the moment that we're in. And so I just thought it would be so interesting to hear from your perspective what is happening in the travel industry right now. What is your elevator pitch of Wild Terrains?
Wild Terrains is on a mission to cultivate relationships that propel women forward. Right now, that spans travel. We curate group trips for women. All of our group trips support women-owned businesses wherever we go. Right now, we go to Mexico, Portugal, and Argentina. But I think we are on a path to be much bigger than just travel.
Tell me about your childhood.
I was born in Texas and lived in Texas until I was about 10. My mom moved my brother. I have a twin brother and I to New Jersey. My mom, pretty much from the time I was in my early teens, played the role of single mom. She was the CFO, chief financial officer of a hotel company. That's where I got my first exposure to travel. She was a career woman, working a ton when I was growing up, and set this example of make sure that you have a career and that you are able to support yourself. She went all over the world. Once a month was traveling mostly to Europe. She really gave me early on my appreciation of learning about other cultures, learning other languages. I love meeting people and asking where they're from and what their story is. She let us be very independent. I was traveling alone by the time I was 18. I went to Europe right after I graduated high school with my brother and a couple of his friends, and we backpacked Europe for a couple of months. When I was 19, I spent my college summer backpacking through Costa Rica with one of my best friends. And she also, because she was a chief financial officer, definitely made sure that I paid for it. When I was in school, I had a job and I was helping pay for things. Any savings I had went towards travel. My mom made sure that we started learning a language really young. I started learning Spanish at age 4. In Texas, you start learning Spanish in school in kindergarten. I'm not super fluent in Spanish. I'm dangerous, is what they would say. It's like I can understand any conversation that's happening around me, and then I'm a little slower to talk back. But it gave me this confidence that Spanish is spoken in so many places all over the world that I could communicate in a lot of different countries.
As you've gone into hospitality, does she give her feedback now?
She is like my number one phone a friend. She's so good on the finance side of things. She's definitely someone I go to when I'm making business decisions that have an impact on my bottom line or revenue. I really trust her opinion. It would have been a lot harder to start without her advice.
What did you study in college?
I was a math major. I love numbers. I did a double major and studied Spanish and studied in Argentina and Peru, hence why we're going to Argentina now.
I was going to say, it's coming full circle.
When I lived in Argentina, I lived with an artist. She was my homestay mom. I lived in her apartment with her. Her name's Yvonne Jacob. She has a Jewish background. Her family immigrated from Europe to Uruguay during World War II. She eventually moved to Buenos Aires when she was in her, I think, 18 or 19, and married an Argentine, and then she stayed. She is on the Argentina itinerary. So I lived with her over a decade ago, and now all the travelers will actually go to her home. Her apartment is amazing. It's covered in all her art. Her art studio's in the actual apartment. So all the girls will get to meet her. She's going to do a really cool art workshop with them.
When you were living with her, was she a source of inspiration?
It was like nothing I had been exposed to. My mom's in finance, so I wouldn't exactly say I came from a family of creatives. And I was studying mathematics, which I happen to be good at, but I'm actually very much a creative. I've accepted that later in life, and I fought it a lot when I was younger. She was the first person that I was exposed to, and for an extended period of time lived with, who was a true artist and a true creative. So she was up at all different hours of the night. constantly creating things. She would find random pieces of string, and the next day she created a net that we hung in the middle of the dining room. It was next level expansion for me to be around her. I'm so grateful because you sort of end up on this path and you look back and you're like, all these experiences led me to where I am now. And that's definitely one of those core experiences where it's so tied to what I'm doing now. And I had no idea.
Why do you think it took you so long to accept yourself as a creative? And I asked that as somebody who had a very similar experience. I studied economics and always flirted with the arts and had lots of friends that were in architecture and art school, but I never let myself go there until senior year. I took a black and white photography class my last semester of senior year. And then I went and worked in banking. It wasn't until I was in grad school in London and spending all of this time in East London around all of these creatives that I started to lean into it a little bit more.
I was constantly flirting with it. I took a photography class too in college, and that was sort of my like only fun class that I took outside of mathematics. My career path has been so bizarre. I think the reason I picked math as a major was I had a teacher when I was in my first year of high school really noticed that I was great at math. He actually advanced me 2 grades in mathematics only. I stayed in my normal grade, but it was like a freshman in high school. He put me in junior level mathematics. So as a sophomore in high school, I took AP Calculus BC and got a 5. By junior year of high school, I had graduated out of high school math. I took a Stanford distance learning mathematics class. I think the reason I started to go down that path is that was where I was getting attention and compliments from adults. It sounds silly, but we all do that. So I was like, oh, I'm good at math, so I'm going to keep doing math. And I ignored the fact that I love to color and I love to build things and I loved taking photos and I was super creative and writing all the time. I kind of ignored that because I was getting all this attention elsewhere. I flirted with it in college. I graduated college a year early. I applied for a travel grant that my school offered. And the grant was they pay for you to travel the world for a year as long as you study a topic that you write a whole proposal on. I picked women's rights and women's issues around the world, which is so full circle now in what I'm working in. And I didn't get the travel grant. I was really upset about it, but I had a friend say, well, why don't you do it anyway? And so I planned a 6-month trip through Asia. I started in Vietnam. I went to Laos. I went to Cambodia, Thailand, Indonesia, Nepal. And in every country, I worked with a different women's NGO. I worked with healthcare, education, domestic violence. I had a blog. Websites were not cool back then. I had a very grungy blog that I wrote updates on. And that blog got recognized by Nicholas Kristof, the New York Times columnist. I was on to something even then. I was 20 years old. When I got home, it was the 2008-2009 financial crisis, and I just got scared. I was like, I need to get a job that pays me a salary and has benefits, because that was what I saw modeled for me growing up. I took a job at PricewaterhouseCoopers, which is the most corporate of the corporate companies you could work for. I did that for 2 years and I hated it, like really hated it. It was soul crushing how boring it was. I got connected with this guy who was starting an advertising agency. I ended up taking a leap of faith and joining this startup advertising agency. And that's really where I started to like embrace my creativity. I call it my master's in marketing. I got a crash course in digital marketing and I worked at the advertising for 3 or 4 years. Then I got hired by Urban Stems, which is a flower delivery company, to run their marketing. I was their first employee. So it was a super small company, super scrappy. It started to do really well. And so I stayed there 3 or 4 years. I really got to learn how to build a brand. I had tons of budget to test marketing ideas. I was making a nice salary there, so I was able to travel on my own. I also, at Urban Stems, worked on a lot of brand partnerships. Collecting all of that experience was what put me in the right place to start Wild Terrains, because we're so focused on partnerships and collaborations around the world. I really learned how to market that when I was at Urban Stems. My biggest collaboration at Urban Stems, it's still going on. We did a long-term collaboration with Vogue, where we worked with all the editors to create Vogue design bouquets. Vogue has a floral line under Urban Stems. It's a huge collaboration behind the scenes. You're working with Vogue editors who are super demanding and very quality focused. I gained a ton of experience working with them and making sure that our brand aligned with Vogue. With Wild Terrains, I've really gotten to flex that skill in a way that I don't think I could have at someone else's company. Really great partnerships have to be really authentic and connected behind the scenes. And when you see a lot of big companies do collaborations and partnerships, they're too big to have the true connection behind the partnership. You have marketing teams collaborating with big marketing teams. Whereas at Wild Terrains, I have a direct connection with all the women that we partner with. It's like an actual relationship, which I think you feel when you're looking at our content, when you go on one of our trips. It's authentic. It's not made up. That creates something really special and something that is missing in a lot of brands' marketing right now.
I wonder if post-COVID world, if these collaborations will change and feel more authentic. You and I have talked about this in the past. The way that we quote unquote do business is very similar. It's a very personal experience.
Totally.
You know, we connect with the person as a person, then, oh, like maybe it makes sense for us to do things together or amplify each other's messages or be part of each other's programming. Now, when I have phone calls with people and you hear their kids in the background, it just feels human versus these more sterile business environments. I wonder if that will trickle into areas like marketing where it feels a bit more authentic.
Totally.
When you were at Urban Stems, what was the transition to Wild Terrains? And I always find this interesting, entrepreneurs, when they decide to make the leap, what tipped things in that direction?
Yeah, I'll give the short version of the story, but I actually got let go from that job. That was a really transformative experience for me. It taught me a lot about being careful about how your company grows. That company grew really fast. Some of the things that made me love that company from the beginning weren't there in the end. Getting let go kind of took me by surprise, but I learned so much from it. I know, especially right now, so many people have lost jobs and it's like a traumatic thing to have happen to you. And it's totally normal to feel like it's a trauma because it is. But I also believe that everything happens for a reason and that usually when something like that happens, as long as you stay open to it, something better is on the way. I had the idea for Wild Terrains. It was in the back of my brain when I was at Urban Stems and it kept evolving, but I never would have left that job. I loved that job. I was chief marketing officer of a startup that was doing really well. I was getting to do cool things like run a collaboration with Vogue. I never would have left that cushy job to start my own thing. I unfortunately don't have a good story of I took the leap of faith. I sort of had my butt kicked out the door and was left in this place of what am I going to do next? But oh my gosh, thank God I did, because look what I have now. I couldn't have dreamed of a more fulfilling, fun job. It's truly one of the best things that ever happened to me.
So you get let go from Urban Stems. What do you do?
Cry a lot. Count the money in my bank account. In reality, I had created sort of a community for myself in sort of the startup world that Urban Stems lives in. So I had a lot of full-time offers very quickly after that from other companies that wanted me to go work for them. I really struggled with that decision because the go-getter in me was like, I'm going to go get another awesome job, chief marketing officer of X startup, and prove to this company that I can do that and that they just let go of someone who is amazing. And then I sort of checked myself and I was like, that's all ego. What do you want? This idea of Wild Terrains was very much under the surface, but it kept coming up. I just couldn't not try to do. I get this question a lot from people. How did you start? I don't have a trust fund. I didn't take funding from anyone. So like, how do you start a business and also pay rent? Enough people don't talk about it. All of these companies, there were a handful that wanted to offer me full-time positions. I said, How about we meet in the middle and I'll consult for you. And while I'm consulting for you, I'll help you find a permanent person for the role that I'm playing. I took on 4 or 5 consulting clients almost immediately. That was how I paid my rent and my bills. And then I started working on Wild Trains. And the truth is I've never let that go. I have 2 jobs. I tend to take 1 or 2 clients a quarter, but I also run Wild Terrains. If anyone's toying with starting a business or wondering how all these people are doing it, many of the entrepreneurs that you see when they started, they had a second gig that was helping them finance this decision.
I think that's something that often isn't talked about. Since COVID, since Future Women events haven't been possible, I've been working for the World Bank again. I've been working on their education team. It's something that people don't talk about, the reality of having to pay your bills. I've been up since 6:15 a.m. this morning because I was taking East Coast calls and I'm in Los Angeles.
Right. It's tough. I have to juggle it. Right now I'm not traveling, but last year I'm running a trip in Portugal and I'm answering client emails. It's definitely a constant juggle. In a way, I also think it makes me better at what I do because I'm getting to practice marketing ideas I have on other businesses. I'm constantly learning new things. It also keeps you on top of things if you're being exposed to other industries, which I like that about consulting.
When you first started Wild Terrains, taking a group of people on a trip, it's a big thing. How do you go from having this idea and being like, okay, I'm going to commit to this and get these people to trust me with taking them on a trip?
Now that you say it that way, it sounds ridiculous. It was so overwhelming at the beginning, even to like decide what the brand name was going to be and decide what the colors were going to be and the fonts. There are so many decisions you make when you're starting a company, getting a tax ID, opening a bank account, that I don't think I thought a lot about what a big task it is to bring people around the world. I don't think I realized. And I think that by doing it, I have learned so much. And of course, I've made some mistakes along the way, but I don't think anyone could have prepared me for it. And there's so many things about running a travel company that are not sexy. The sexy stuff is what you see on Instagram, but I also am dealing with so many different time zones. I'm dealing with a ton of partners whose first language is a different language than mine. I have to have crazy business insurance. You would not believe what my business insurance policy looks like for taking women I don't know all over the world. And then also I'm dealing with all different currencies. So if I price something somewhere in Portugal, that price may change next year, right? So there's so many complex things with this business that I'm glad I didn't know them when I started because I wouldn't have started it.
What was a time when you're like, oh, wow, like I really messed up?
Oh, that's tough. I'm in a people business, right? My customers are people and what I'm selling them is an experience that is created by other people. I've really had to step up my game with having good communication, especially with the partners. Their first language is not English. I have to be very thoughtful about how I communicate changes or, you know, decisions we've made and make sure that they feel like we're putting them first and that we're being mindful of what's going on in their lives and their businesses. So I'm sure I've made thousands of mistakes, but I think I've also really, my communication's gotten really good because of this business, because I have to be so careful about it. I'm a little lucky that I'm selling travel. It's so fun. So usually when I write an email now, I have to go through and edit out exclamation points because I have too many. When I worked at an advertising agency, I was very serious and proper. I wasn't super warm. I was one of the only women, even at Urban Stems. Urban Stems was started by 5 men. So I was one of the only women at the table constantly. And so I took on this more, not to gender stereotype it, but this more like masculine energy of just being kind of aggressive, a go-getter. I was constantly stressed, and I'm sure my email communication came off that way. But now I work with all women, so I get to lean into that feminine energy, that feminine, softer side of myself. It's so lovely because I get to send an email where I'm, even to a traveler, I'm like, how are you? How's your family? How are your kids? Are you so sick of homeschooling? That brings me a lot of joy, that level of connection. It's missing in so many of our working environments.
Completely. what do you then start to do to be like, okay, this is going to be our first trip?
In my gut, I knew it was going to be Mexico City. This was in early 2018. I booked a trip to Mexico City just by myself. I had been to Mexico City before. When I went a few years before, I had met these two amazing women, Livia and Paulina, and they own a textile company in Mexico called Color Indio. They make beautiful textiles. Go check them out. They were at this cool pop-up market in the middle of Mexico City, and I bought some textiles from them. I took a photo of them, and I posted it on Instagram. This was years, years ago. A German magazine named Couch reached out to me and wanted to buy the photograph. And so it gave me an excuse to email them. We sort of became friends through that exchange. Years later, in 2018, when I decided to go to Mexico City, they were the first people I reached out to. I sort of just went to Mexico City to learn how I should scout destinations. I had to go a few times, but I went, I set up meetings with a few women. Those women connected me with their friends. Those women told me I should check out these places. And so I sort of just went on this giant crawl of meeting interesting women, finding interesting places. And then I planned a pilot trip that I actually sold to my friends before there was even a website. There was no website. I emailed all my cool girlfriends and I said, I think I'm starting a travel company. The first place is going to be Mexico City. I want to run a pilot trip on July 1st through 5th of 2018. This was in April, so they have 2 months notice. Who wants to go? And it'll be at cost. I'm not going to make anything off of it. But the deal is you have to give me feedback. And it was so fun. It was all my friends from all different walks of life. That trip sold out in the day. And I didn't even have a website.
How many were you guys?
We were 10 or 12. I really quickly was like, okay, I got to make an itinerary. I pulled together all the partners, a lot of whom are the same partners that we still work with in Mexico today. And we put together this first trip. And my friends are really open with giving feedback. So along the trip, they were like, you should do this instead, or we should do that next. Or, you know, we didn't like this experience, change it to something else. One of my best friends is a photographer. So she came, she took a bunch of photos of all of us. And then when I got home, I launched it. And I launched it with one trip for January 2019. And then it just sort of grew from there. In 2019, we did 10 trips.
Were you personally on all of those trips?
Yes. In 2019, yes. I was so exhausted. And I also scouted and launched Portugal in 2019. I think I was on the road more than half the year. In early 2020, before the pandemic hit, I brought on women in each country that we operate in to lead the trips moving forward. So we were ready to do that in 2020. And in 2021, all of them will lead the trips.
Who do you find is joining your trips?
It's definitely a mixture of ages. Our normal trip spans ages 28 to 79, and it's pretty evenly distributed across that range. It's about half women coming on their own, so a solo traveler, and then half will come with a friend, a coworker, their mom, their sister. About 90% is from the US, 8% is from Canada, and 2% is from all over the world. One of the most interesting things about our trips is that they're really multi-generational. We're one of the only travel companies that doesn't restrict our trips by age. Most group travel companies' websites, they will say an age range. I actually think they're all missing a huge market by doing that. When I first launched Wild Terrains, I launched with photos of all my friends, and we were all in our 30s and 40s. I started getting emails from women in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s saying, I see the photos only have women in their 30s and 40s, but can I come on your trip? Women in their 60s, 70s, 80s, their only option is senior citizen trips. And yet, we have so many women who are that age who are so young at heart and so vibrant and don't want to be bucketed into that category. And yet there's no travel option for them. The other thing that happens is it excludes multi-generational families, mothers traveling with their daughters or grandmothers traveling with their granddaughters, which we have a lot of. Our society, specifically in the US, is very segmented by age. We have a host of issues that we need to resolve in our country, but ageism is one of them. And if you really think about it, how many women outside of your close relatives, how many women who are 50, 60, 70 do you spend time with? It's not that many. We don't have spaces where multi-generational women can connect with each other. It's just not something that our society builds. I would argue that it's really important. I see the benefit of it on our trips. You don't always want to talk about the fact that you're going through a divorce with your own mom, right? If you're on a trip with us and you're in your 30s and you're going through a divorce, there's probably a woman in her 60s or 70s who's been through one or two divorces already and can give you a lot of wisdom and experience and share. That's something that's so missing in our culture. There's a lot of sharing and community that used to happen when we all lived in little villages and all the childcare was spread out among all the women in the village and all the chores and work was spread out among everyone and taking care of older people was not left to a single child. There's such a host of issues of not having that community that's multi-generational for us to live within.
I totally agree. My grandma is 99 years old. Every time I go to visit her, her stories are incredible. She was born in 1921.
Oh my gosh.
Great Depression. Yeah. Went to university at a time when women didn't do that, then held all these high level positions, traveled to Asia a lot for work. Her stories are just incredible. She'll say, oh, but you don't need to listen to these. And I'm like, no, this is much more interesting than going to watch some TV show. It's really interesting stuff that's filled with history. So I completely agree. We are missing this opportunity to learn from different generations. Mm-hmm. When you think about partners in a new city, what types of women are you partnering with?
Really, the way I pick partners is I start with the people. I'm less focused on what that person does, how successful their business is, and more focused on, are they a kind and interesting person? I'm putting all these partners in front of travelers. So you have to be kind and warm and welcoming to make that a good experience. And it also just makes my life easier. We have almost over 100 partners now. And so if they aren't kind and thoughtful, then it's hard to work with 100 people. But my job's actually very easy because everyone's so lovely. And then something I think a lot of people don't realize about us is we don't dictate what the partners do on the trip. To give an example, in Portugal, we work with a woman named Vanessa Teodoro. She is the leading female street artist in Portugal. She's so fascinating. She actually is from South Africa and she moved to Portugal when she was little. And she's just like a true artist. She's so brilliant. And when I met her, I didn't say, you need to do this experience on our trips. I said, what would make you happy? What would be an experience that you would like to do with the travelers? And she thought about it. And then she said, I want to teach them how to graffiti. And so every trip, she gets a new wall in Lisbon. Lisbon is really interesting because graffiti is actually something that you like apply for a permit for with the city. And so you can actually like request walls to be yours to graffiti on. And so every trip she gets a different wall. She brings tons of spray paint cans and she teaches the girls how to graffiti and they build a giant mural. It's the first thing they do when they get off the plane. And it's super fun. Everyone bonds because you feel like you're kind of a little rebel graffitiing this wall in Lisbon and you're so jet lagged that you have to laugh about it. It's so important that she chose that herself because she's invested in it. It's something that she likes showing the girls and we didn't dictate it. Most travel companies come to a vendor and say, I want you to take my group on a street art tour. They have less interesting experiences because they do that. We have really fascinating experiences because I don't go to a chef and say, okay, you need to host a private dinner. I say, what do you want to do? And then the chef comes back to me a few days later and says, oh, my grandmother's house is 20 minutes away. It's empty because she's no longer alive. And I always go there for peace and quiet because she has an amazing garden. Let's host the private dinner there.
When you give these women agency, they come back with much more creative ideas and proposals than you would have ever come up with just because they know the context.
Right. And I think if we're going full circle, what's happening in this pandemic, the brands that are going to do well and survive the pandemic, I think are the ones that, like you said, bring humanity into it. That's what you feel when you look at our itineraries. It's this collective collaboration of really the most fascinating women in these places have all curated these experiences that I, on my own, could have never dreamed up. And that's why it feels so special.
I love that example of the graffiti. What's another example where you're like, I could have never dreamt this up?
So I'm going to tell you one from Argentina because it's so cool and I'm so excited for it. When I was in Buenos Aires, I had coffee with this woman. She's the only female perfume maker from Argentina. And I love perfume. I think it's such a fun thing, but I know nothing about it. I have a few perfumes that I love, and I don't even really know how perfume is made. I had always wanted to put a perfume maker on the trips. And unfortunately, in Mexico and Portugal, there really aren't female perfume makers that I've found. But when I got to Argentina, I found Natalia. And Natalia owns Frey Fragrances. I met with her for coffee. We got to know each other, talked for 2 hours. Then we started talking about what she wanted to do. And she was like, well, I really want to do a perfume blending class, but I want it to be really unique. We started brainstorming and I was like, well, what if instead of doing it here in Buenos Aires, which was the obvious choice because that's where her perfumery is, I said, what if you come to Patagonia with us? The reason we were talking about Patagonia is all her perfumes are inspired by places and experiences within Argentina. And so one of her perfumes is inspired by Patagonia. The experience we came up with is she's coming to Patagonia with the group. She flies there. She stays 2 nights. And one of the full days in the morning, we go on a sensory hike with her. And she points out all the flora and fauna that you can use in a perfume to create a scent. She'll talk about the process of how you do that. Everyone will come back in the afternoon to our hotel, which is a beautiful woman-owned hotel with a view of the Patagonian lakes and mountains. It's gorgeous. And she'll be all set up to do a perfume blending workshop. She'll teach you how to blend a perfume. You'll get to blend your own perfume, bottle it, and take it home with you.
That's incredible.
I know. It's like, it's so cool. I can't wait to do it. I like actually haven't done that full experience yet because it's so involved. Anyone else would have just said, yeah, let's do a perfume blending workshop at your perfumery. But because she and I talked for so long and brainstormed, like this amazing experience came out of it.
How many trips have you hosted to date and what's coming up?
I believe we did 10 in 2019. And then we did one in March. We had to reschedule almost 15 from 2020. Next year, we are doing Mexico, Portugal, Argentina. We have about 20 trips lined up. And I would say they're about 70% full. A lot of people got rescheduled from this year.
When I look at your guys' photos, something that I really appreciate is it seems like you are putting an emphasis on diversity. I know a future of women. I spend a lot of time when we're doing panels, when we're doing events, making sure it's diverse, where yeah. I will literally tell someone, I am looking for an Asian woman that does this. I'm looking for a Latina woman that does that.
I'm constantly focused on it now more than ever. It's a conversation that I'm having with our team and with myself all the time. With people who attend, you can't really control the diversity. And because my trips are a max of 12 people, some trips have been really diverse and some haven't. I would like our trips to be even more diverse. I would like us to be the first travel company that non-binary and trans people feel comfortable traveling on. I would like anyone who's female identifying to feel comfortable and welcome on our trips. That's something that's forefront for me is how do I make that happen? On the partner side, every country has its own diversity issues. In Mexico, you have a really large indigenous population that is discriminated against. I'm constantly thinking about how I can make sure I'm representing that group in a great way. In Argentina, there's not really a African or Black population at all. And there's a dark history behind that where the Argentine government, there used to be a pretty significant population and they pushed them out of the country through various ways. And so I would say it's something I'm like constantly thinking about. And I know we can do a much better job of what we're doing now. And I hope that in the coming year and years to come will be even more diverse.
Why have you selected the countries that you've selected?
Mexico was very much intuition. It was my first country, but I also speak the language. Portugal, it was sort of a counterpoint to Mexico. there's an audience in the United States that feels uncomfortable traveling to Mexico City. I don't know if it's because it's a big chaotic city or if it's because the news tends to portray it in a violent light. I spent over 100 days in Mexico City last year and I never had a problem. I feel very safe there. But there is an audience that doesn't want to travel there. Portugal is so safe. Portugal is a good bridge for people who maybe haven't traveled too often on their own and they want to go somewhere where they're not going to be worried about those types of issues. And then Argentina was just so special to me because I lived there for a short period. It's such a bucket list trip for many people. It's kind of a difficult destination to plan a big trip for yourself. I like to pick destinations where I can show you a different side of the place. You won't find anything touristy on our trips. So there's still like a great trip for someone who's already been to Argentina or already been to Mexico City.
I've always wanted to go to Patagonia.
When I see your emails come out, I'm like,
Come to the perfume workshop.
What does it look like to run a travel business during COVID? I've been seeing certain stats come out, world travel councils advising on certain things.
Just candidly, right now it's a shit show. Nobody knows what is happening in the next month or two. We canceled all our trips for this year. We just didn't feel like they were safe to go. We wanted to wait for more information. Our next trip isn't until March 2021. I'm hoping by then we will be in a better place of just having more information and feeling like it's safer to travel. We are doing some things to make sure that our group is safe. Our trips are always small. We never go above 12 people. So you're already in a small little pod of people. Our activities never go into crowded touristy areas. Most of our activities are private with the women that we're visiting. So we kind of keep that small group the entire time. And for the most part, if we're not walking somewhere, we have private transportation. So you're not hopping on a subway. Depending on what happens with vaccines and general case numbers, we are probably going to require all of our travelers to provide a negative COVID test a few days before the trip. And I think that will just help people have peace of mind. At least they know that our group doesn't have anyone who's infected. There's so much going around about like travel shaming. Some people are already hopping on planes left and right. Other people are judging the fact that they're doing that. I don't really have a stance. I haven't been on a plane yet, but I'm planning to take my first flight in November. And it's really just about deciding what you're comfortable with. When are you going to be comfortable traveling? Do you think that you personally can take the right precautions? If you're going with a tour operator like us, do you feel like we've answered all your questions and that we're doing a good job of making everyone feel safe? If you're thinking about planning a trip, ask people questions. I love when travelers email us and ask us questions. It gives me a chance to hop on the phone with them and reassure them that we're doing the right things.
It also alerts you to what people are concerned about right now.
I'm talking to so many women about travel all the time. Probably half the travelers that I canceled on this year were upset that the trips weren't going. And then the other half are like, thank God, I don't feel safe traveling. If you're someone who's immunocompromised or anyone who's older, you're more at risk. So you have to make a different travel decision than someone who's 25.
Well, Lauren, I will join one of these trips one of these
days. You're welcome anytime.
Thank you, because I really admire how thoughtful you are with the curation of the partners, making sure that this is an experience that is unique, that recognizes what each of the women who you're partnering with is creating. Thank you so much for taking time.
Oh my God, thanks for having me.
Keep me posted on everything. And I will be following all of the developments at Wild Terrains.
Thanks, you too.
We'll talk soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye.